Hey, welcome to the Bullpen Session. This is Pounder Clellis. Glad you're here. Glad you're listening. Hope everybody had a festive Thanksgiving and getting ready, gearing up for the holiday season, but also getting done what you need to get done before the end of the year. I appreciate that part of it. Excited to share today with conversation with Lori Vega, actor, a friend of mine, and also the, I realized, first intern. Lori was the first to volunteer for the farm to help set up the live bullpen sessions and was incredibly helpful and just amazing 9-10 years later to get to talk to her as a guest and see all the work that she is doing as acting, which one of the reasons I wanted to talk to her is just watching the steady increase over that time of work regionally and then in New York, and you'll get us to hear us talking about that and how that came about, and really appreciated it. And also, as I'm thinking about Thanksgiving, just literally my favorite holiday, because you celebrate it with whoever you're around the table with, eating and being thankful. And it's always a good time of year to be thankful. And I am thankful. I'm thankful for people like Lori who volunteered early on with the farm. And now that we're celebrating the end of this season, it'll be 10 years. We'll be kicking off our We finished 10 years. I guess we're kicking off the 11th, but celebrating 10 years and everybody who helped and supported, and hope you continue to support, but glad you're listening. And yeah, just really thankful and appreciative as things are getting back. You know, I was taking the students to plays and I was thinking about the fact of, you know, that it feels like the theater is feeling full-time and a little more normal now. And I am grateful for that. And because there is a lot of activity happening and a lot of people, you know, getting a chance to get back into the community and do things. And it's just nice for that normalcy. So I'm really grateful and thankful for that. And also grateful for a lesson that I learned taking students to plays that have not been to plays before and realizing that, you know, just to be open to experience what's being given. And that is something I was thinking about lately. It's like when I go to a show, kind of my expectation of what that show is or what it needs to be, but I want to be open to what they're giving me. And the students are really good at it, and I need to get better at it. But again, thank you, and I am grateful to have the time to sit down and talk to Lori. And with that, I am going to share with you our conversation. So, play ball.
So I'm in Providence, Rhode Island right now, working at Trinity Rep on a new play called The Good John Proctor, which is a prequel to The Crucible by Talene Monahan. And it actually initially premiered this past spring in New York with Bedlam. I think they did it at the Connolly. I didn't see it. I think it was like in March. Sometime March, April, May, somewhere around there. And we're doing, yeah.
Is the prequel The Affair?
Yeah, essentially. But what makes this play is incredible. Like what makes, it's funny because I actually auditioned, put myself on tape for it when you were visiting us at home. It's all of the young girls the year prior to the trials, about so 9, 10, 14, and 18, Mary Warren, Mercy, Abigail, and Betty, Betty Paris, all played by adults. It's all meant to be played by adults. And it's all in contemporary language. So it's all in like language that teenagers would speak at the moment. And it's putting in perspective, like the actual age differences between John Proctor and who Abigail was. Abigail was actually like 11 years old, and putting into perspective the age of all of the young women at the time. And they were all like preteen to like the eldest was Mary Warren. So, and what that in terms of like, what kind of mindset was going on with the young women? I mean, why it would explain the behavior that happened and the hysteria that happened. That's like one aspect of it for the trials. Also, it's just this relationship with John, Roger, and Abigail. And it's like, she's not even a teenager. She's a preteen.
Right.
And that well, was you know, historical. Yeah.
And you know that, yeah, the Farm College Collab, Kimberly Bellflower, developed her play, John Proctor is the Villain. So,
yeah.
Which is, takes place contemporary times, exam, but in a similar, growing up in the Me Too era, using that as a model of how it's been misrepresented throughout history. John Proctor, my name. You're like, you.
Well, you know, the funny thing is the reason it's been misrepresented because it was through the lens of Arthur Miller. We don't really know, honestly. It is historically documented that she worked at the Proctor household and then was dismissed. That's really all the facts that they have. But at the time when Arthur Miller was doing his own research and visiting Salem, he thought it was interesting that that happened because he's like, oh, there must have been some sort of affair. Why would he be dismissed her? And he consciously changed the ages. I think he made Abigail 15 or 16 in his play. And John Proctor was like in his 60s. And I think he made him, I don't know, 35 or something in his play. So he switched the ages around. And Arthur Miller also was dealing with the guilt in his own personal life of having an affair. So it's essentially his perspective that was put on this historical event that everybody thinks actually happened. And it's actually skewed through an imaginary point of view, essentially.
Right. Or the point of view of him and what he's going through in his life. While trying to also guise the affair of like, well, let's talk about McCarthyism and communism.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Which is, again, also an important thing to talk about in terms of like...
How's the run going?
Oh, it's been going really well. I mean, I was talking to my husband, Seth, about this. He's like, wow, it pretty much like checks all the boxes. It's like, it's a wonderful project. The play is incredible. The creative team is amazing. My experience and time here has been great. The people here are wonderful. We're doing it in rep with Becky Nurse of Salem. So there's another cast that is in rotation between, you know, our show and theirs. So it's been nice to meet them too. Providence is great. Yeah, it's been a wonderful experience. It kind of, in a weird way, came out of nowhere. So, and I booked it all on tape. I sent in a tape and then I Zoomed. They wanted me to come in person to Providence and I was like, can't do it. Can you Zoom me? And I booked it. My callback was on Zoom.
Wow. And you can't do it. Why couldn't you do it?
Well, Providence is 3 hours from where I live. And I had family in town at the time. My parents were visiting. And I just couldn't take 6 hours. Like, I was like, I can't make it to Providence. Can we?
And this is a silly thing, but they're hired. Like, that would have, why did it happen in Providence? Not that there's anything wrong. It's a lovely city. But usually, regionally, it feels like callbacks pre-pandemic were in New York.
Yeah, I don't know what all of the inner workings were behind the scenes, because I knew that they were contemplating having callbacks in New York, but ultimately ended up not doing that. And I think it's partially that they have a resident acting company here. They have a pool of actors from which they work with. And I think they had difficulty finding one or two specific roles. And I think they would have maybe gone to New York, but I think ultimately it might have just, I don't actually know, but it probably just came down to budgeting. And it was probably because they had their own space. And so if people could come to them, that would be much more efficient and easier for them, if I could guess.
Yeah. I also forgot you're at Trinity, so they have their own company still, which is nice.
Exactly. So that's the other thing. It's highly unusual for them to cast outside of local actors or their pool of resident actors or even MFA students who may be cast in some of the main stages. So to have someone, basically a gigging actor from New York or wherever, Chicago, come in is just not as common. So great. Glad it worked out.
So you said it came out of nowhere. How did the audition come about?
So I was sort of combing through, people were announcing their seasons, and I was looking through them and going, oh, I could do this, I could do that. And I didn't honestly have any contacts at Trinity Rep, none whatsoever. And they were holding an EPA. So I said, I'm so sorry, I'm unable to attend in person. Would you accept a tape for consideration for this other show in their season? Not even this show. Because according to the breakdown, to me, it already looked like it had been cast. So then they were like, yeah, sure. So I just kind of cold emailed casting based off of the Equity website, and they called me in for this show. I didn't even reference anyone, nothing.
And
And
you have it, you have an agent, right?
yes, I'm working with a manager, and I have
Manager.
an agent for voiceover and commercial stuff.
And so you did this just because on your own, you're looking at Playbill, you're looking at the Equity website, you see it, and you emailed, they announced who the casting person was. They probably have in-house casting. And
Yeah.
you reached out directly.
Yeah, I did.
I
And then
think.
I said, if you're interested, please contact my reps and go through them, which they did.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I still do that. Especially for theater, not so much for TV is a whole other thing that has taken me a while to get a grasp on. And I find with TV, it's really, really beneficial to have representation in order to be seen, at least what I've discovered. But for theater is more, I just feel like you have more access to people, even if you don't have representation with theater, in a way that I think is slightly different from TV and film, if you don't have representation. But again, I'm sure there's other people who have been able to figure out the TV film thing without reps, but also depends on the market. I'm sure like Atlanta or something is different.
But I love
But
that. Yeah, it's great. You reached out, and also that they watched it, because I like that as a model. Because years and years and years ago, I remember putting a letter back in the day in the mailbox, thinking, "Who's going to read it?" And then getting a job, and like, "Oh, right, they do read, and they are looking for
I
solutions."
think the pandemic, as awful as it was for globally for the world and honestly for the nonprofit arts, I know people, I it was great for me professionally because it switched the game in terms of how you can get seen. You don't have to show up in person anymore. So I tell a lot of people who are recently graduating, and if they can't come to New York or they can't go this, I was like, email casting, ask if you can send them a tape, because they will probably almost always say yes, because the pandemic demanded that. That was the only way they could see people. And now it's normal. Now it's a normal thing to do.
And when you said it benefited you, did it benefit you? Because I know that you moved outside of the city during the pandemic. And did it benefit you because of that? Or did it benefit you just because your schedule, if you might be working at UConn and
Yeah.
or booked somewhere else where it's just harder to get into a room?
I mean, all of it. Like, I mean, I will say, I spent many couple decades in New York, like making my, meeting people and making connections and developing my relationships, of course. So I wasn't like I was starting from scratch, but moving out of the city did allow me, and working remotely for my day job did allow just like breathing room and less stress and pressure. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, I was running from a day job to an audition that could have been for a co-star for like two lines, running back to my day job. And it was physically exhausting. And I often thought, I don't think my auditions are suffering because I'm not fully there. I can't move from one environment, change my mindset to a next, be fully dropped in physically, do it, and then go back to my day job. Like, it's amazing that I was being able to do it as long as I did. But yeah, I mean, that was hard. And I think now with video and Zoom, and you can do it at home. I mean, I sent so many on camera tapes. I have so much more control. I can take my time. I can do it anytime I'm available. It's just, I don't know. It helped me relax and take the pressure off of stuff in a way. Honestly, I think it's way more humane. It has been for me. And cast and directors, they can see more people as a result. So I know it's some people don't really like that format, but I love it. It's been great for me.
How do you, I love that you look at Playbill and the Equity website and like, how do you stay connected? Because I think we're all adjusting to a new time, and I think there's a new post-pandemic behavior, of how people are interacting. But when you moved out of the city, you moved about 2 hours north, right? And so when you say you find different ways, I'll ask you later about how you started your initial relationships, but how are you staying in contact now, and what are you doing to keep the relationships alive?
I do periodically send, maybe every time I'm in a show, I usually send out an email to like my industry email list just to say, hey, I'm doing this thing. Honestly, social media like Instagram and Facebook is a really good way. Nothing like, ooh, let me network and da 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 da. Seeing what my friends are doing, what other industry professionals are, and if they're just posting about something, commenting or sending them a message or being like, oh, hey, I saw you were upstate. Seth and I are up in Athens. We should hang out, or you should go to this place, like just in very like normal human ways. I mean, and I'd say those are the main ways that I like keep my relationships, cultivated. And then of course, every time I go to the city, I make sure I reach out to a few people just to see if they're available to meet up in person. Because when I was in the city last for Playwrights, I saw so many friends, met up for so many drinks, so many lunches. And yeah, living upstate, also a lot of friends have reached out to see if they can come and visit, which is always great. Yeah, so those are probably the two or three main ways that I make sure I.
I think that social media is the human interaction is actually, it's the simplest and best. It's
The
just.
simplest, like even if it's like one or two people a day, like I try to older contacts that I haven't talked to for a while, if they post something and I find it interesting, not don't I don't go to be like, oh, I saw you posted this thing. No, if I actually authentically have something to say, then I'll be like, oh, and I haven't talked to them for a while, I'll just send this little note. It's just a good way to remember, have people be like, oh, right, yeah, Lori.
This is basic, but when you're saying it, it is a good way to say, oh yeah, I remember. And that because also sometimes, we're there and we saw it and we're voyeuristic and
Yeah.
you went and like, why did you see it? Well, I wanted to see what people are up to. So if you're interested, say that's great. Congratulations or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
Simple.
exactly.
Cause I'm interested in the building the network and maintaining it, but also one of the reasons I wanted to talk when you were talking about running in day job to audition back to day job is, and I know you're working a day job remotely and it works out for you, but from the outside perspective, seem to be recently booking consistently. And I am curious, what do you think changed or helped that to happen for you? What moved it from from not from very sporadic to like, oh, I went to UConn and then I saw this and I'm at Trinity and
Yeah, I mean, it started to slowly happen a few years prior to the pandemic, I would say 27, 2018. I mean, part of it is I have a partner who is supportive and we work together and we share finances and we support each other's careers and endeavors. And I'd be lying if I said that that wasn't a huge help, because doing it single, plus having a day job and trying to finance your life and feed yourself and keep up with the industry and you're by alone, it's hard. I did it for a very, very long time. So, yeah.
and you're when you say you work together as a unit, like supporting each other, because I know Seth also, he's a writer. And so it's not like you're both actors in it, you're both artists in it, supporting each other.
Yeah. We're both theater artists.
Very good.
So, you know, we both understand the industry. But I'd be lying if I said getting married and having a partner was bear help relieved a lot. I mean, share a lot of the stress. Believe me, our life is still stressful. But yeah, I mean, it's true. Having a partner, at least for me, has been wonderful. So that is partly. And then so we made a plan and we're like, you have to get out of this corporate job. I was like, I have to get out of this corporate job. So we saved up, we made a plan. I went off to do the 1 month winter intensive with Shakespeare and Company, which I highly recommend. I loved it up in Lenox. And I left my corporate job. And literally after I left, I did the 1 month intensive. I booked Target Margin while I was there. That's when it was more consistent work. That's not to say that I still had to juggle day job stuff. But I wasn't like bound to this corporate job that I had had for several years at this point. Yeah, and then I Target Margin I booked in 2018. Yeah, 2018. And so and Target Margin became kind of a theater family for me because I did multiple shows with them. And honestly, coming right out of the intensive and then working with them, I owe so much to David and that company. I think it made me not only a better actor and a better artist, I truly think it made me a better human. He's incredible. That company is incredible. I think the way he works and his perspective on just how he approaches his art and everything really is amazing. And I think that it sort of altered sort of like my mindset and how I approach the work, how I approach people. That everybody, I mean, you always know this, but you're like, everybody has something of value to contribute, and you have no way how it's going to play out. Everyone has something of value to contribute, whether, you know, they're the electrician there that day or the box office person, they're pulled into the creative process and they contribute to it. And everyone, they're in terms of like status, it's not about that. It's about contributing or serving the work. And that really expanded, I think, my technique, but really my mindset, my approach. So I really do owe a lot to Target Margin. I love them very, very much.
I love that openness of process. I think a similar way of the everybody in the room is valuable.
Everyone has something of value to contribute.
And I'm curious, how did that change your approach when you say your approach to work? Like now that you're when you're at Trinity or something, how does that change you as a an actor in the room?
I think it just sort of It expanded one, my sense of play. My sense of play and like if something doesn't work, not worrying about something's gonna be bad or good. It expanded, it just sort of it just expanded my vision of everybody's who everybody in the room, everyone who's contributing to the process, from costumes to the PAs. And yeah, I guess I don't know if I've answered your question.
Good. Yeah,
But I
yeah.
think
I'm getting a sense of that, and I like that there's an inclusiveness, an openness of walking in the room and not being and realizing that we're all doing it together. And
yeah, I mean, look, I need to constantly take my own advice. I constantly forget that. But it was never when I first started out. That was never like in the forefront of my mind all the time. It was more like, I gotta like get this job. I gotta keep working. I gotta network. I need to meet these people. I need to get an agent. But it, I, you know, it's more now my, I'd be lying if I said, like, yeah, I want all those things. Of course, I want to have this and that and work with this person and that person. I'd be lying if I said that is something I didn't want. But it's not the most, ultimately, the most important. And so I'm constantly thinking more about what it is. Why am I in this project? How do I fit into this story? How can I serve it? And how can I be open to all the other people here who are doing the same thing? That was never a way of thinking when I first graduated from college about the process. It was very, more me focused, of course, very actor-minded focus. But that's not, I just, for me anyways, that's not what is going to be most satisfying.
Yeah.
So.
And it also feels like, if we're talking about building community and stuff, it also is opening up so that you're sharing yourself, but also valuing is not the right word. I don't think not valuing people before, but experiencing them and getting actual authentic collaboration
Yeah.
happening.
I mean, one thing I did, start doing more and more of too is even before I booked Target Margin and stuff started rolling more consistently for me, was this is one thing I did definitely before I got married and when I was single. I really focused on my friends and my community and my close friends. I would show up for them. I would try to go to their readings, try to go to their things, go to their drink thing. I lived in Washington Heights. I would travel an hour and a half if I needed to go to Brooklyn, because why not? Why? I'm just gonna go. I don't have, I'm done with work. I don't have anything to do. I'm gonna go support my friend and I'm gonna show up and I'm gonna be there for them. And that was something I did definitely did do. I wanted to focus just loving on my friends. And I had a, I developed a really close circle of friends who supported me, and they showed up for me and I showed up for them. And that's all, like, that's very important. And that was part of, it takes time and it's not going to happen quickly, but if you do it intentionally and if you do it because I'm really just here because I'm your friend and I want to support you and I want good things for you, So, yeah, that was one thing I definitely was like, oh, this is something I should probably do.
Yeah, well, I also like the, going back to the humanness on social media, it's like if I show up because you're my friend and I want good things for you.
Because you're my friend, like, great.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I'm not here for anything. I'm not asking you for anything. I'm your friend and I'm here and I think this is great. And that's what really I think will authentically connect people. You know, that's not to say you can't make professional asks. You have to be specific, you know.
And be a professional ask when, because you have representation, how'd that come about?
So I booked a new play, new contemporary play at the Rep St. Louis. And they were doing a developmental reading of it in New York before we did it in St. Louis. And one of the cast members in that cast, his manager came to see the reading of it. And he talked to me afterwards and was like, "Love to meet you. Let's set up a time to meet when you come back." And I did, of course. And he signed me. And it's so funny. I don't have any magical explanation about it. I had been like off and on with various like smaller agencies for years, but none of them were had been super helpful for me. I always feel like I interview terribly for these things. Like I still don't. I'm still work figuring agent and manager interviews out. I have no idea what I said or did, but he saw my work. That is the difference. He saw my work in the reading. So, and he knew his client in the show. So I'm sure he asked his client about what I was like to work with, how was she out in St. Louis? So it was all of those kind of things together. So, you know, if I was nervous in the interview, he probably already had enough data to be like, she's just nervous in the interview.
What's your relationship with the manager in the sense of talking about where you'd like to be or what type of stuff you want to go out for, and or is it, wherever you can get me?
Oh no, it's very it's been very specific, and he's had to remind me to like keep me on track, keep me on target. I mean, I really do want to be more New York City centric. Of course, with like the strikes and everything, he's more willing to let me go and work regionally. He's like, "Well, there's nothing going on. You can go to Providence." Well, he'll it's not like he won't will or won't let me go,
Right.
but it's about like what are the steps you need to take? Okay, you want to be more New York centric and you want to do and you want to expand to TV and film. And I always use specific actors as an example. That they may not be my type, but the type of work that they're doing in the place they're doing it, like Zoe Winters or Reed Birney or Maria Dizia, like exciting new contemporary work, interesting television, and they're New York actors, or they don't have to be based in New York. Like I think Reed Birney just did a show up in Barrington or something recently. And I knew that's the type of, that was the type of work, those type of artists that I knew I wanted to be doing. I'm not anything like them, or we're not exactly the same type, but it was the type of work that they were doing that was interesting to me. Because I knew I was like, I don't want to go to LA. I don't think I would be happy there. But as long as I knew if I could keep my foot in theater and expand to interesting, figure out how, and also how to learn how to be on TV, that was a whole other process. Learning how to be on tape, it is really a different medium. And I had to, I had to figure out how to do that because it is different.
Did you learn on the job, or did you learn through a workshop, or did you?
I learned through consistent, the two best ways I learned, consistent on camera classes with good teachers like Bob Krakauer and anyone that he has taught. Consistent, it's like anything else, working on any kind of technique. And now because auditions are so much more on camera, they're almost all video now, especially obviously for television. You don't have to show up in person anymore. It was practice. I was practicing because I was auditioning so much on camera. it was making me practice and implement these new techniques that I was learning in class. So practice, essentially, just practice, 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 practice. But you have to take the time. Like, you have to learn. I wish one thing, like, schools need to have an on-camera consistent class as part of their like syllabus. It has to be on there. And it's, I think it's doing them a disservice to not have it.
You used to be like, oh, there's little, even if you were training just in acting, and then I think they would assume you'd learn in a film and television what the difference was on the job. But it's like, no, to get the
Oh,
job.
no, you need to know before you get the job. Oh my gosh. Because it's so overwhelming to be on set when you're a co-star. And all the series regulars are there and all the cameras are there and they have a completely different vocabulary than theater people. Words that I'm like, what? Which camera? Like, where to look? It's a whole different thing and it needs to be taught in schools. So sometimes you're like, I'm pretending like I know what I'm doing right now on set, but I have no idea where what's happening.
What do you think you carry into the room, like when you're showing up on your first day at Trinity, that you might not have, or any room? It could be the audition room or it could be social setting, but what do you think you carry into the room that you didn't when you were just starting out?
I mean, I think the obvious answer is probably just like, the work that I've built on the last 20 years. Doubt never goes away. There's always going to be like some percentage of like, I think I was good at this last time, but maybe I'm not this time. Thought I knew this. And then you're like, all right, I do. So that, like, just knowing I'm still here. Like, I'm like, wow, I'm still here and I'm doing it and I'm pretty proud of what I've done. So knowing the work that I put into it, the experience that I have, the relationships that I've built are not for nothing. They have all brought me to this specific moment. And now I'm meeting new people. And what are ways that I can serve the story? Because there's a reason they want me here to help tell the story. So let me figure out what that is. That was not how I was thinking initially when I was like first starting out in New York, was like, I'm here for a reason. I fit the story to help tell this story, and I'm going to figure out what that is. I mean, they think I figured it out. I'm there to solve their problem. So as opposed to like, oh my God, I need to make sure everybody likes me and impress everybody. And like, well, yeah, clearly they already do. That's why you're here. You did that. So
Yeah.
let's figure out how to tell the story together because you're gonna help serve it. You serve this piece.
Talk about that just a little bit when you say, what can I bring to it? Does that mean? Because it was two things that came to my mind. First, I thought it's like what you bring as an artist, just independently, like what is my life experience? What do I bring to the story? Why do I enrich it? But then as you talked also about like how do I fit, is there's like, oh, does my aspect of this a part of a puzzle that I need to understand what my role, what the character I'm playing or the role I'm playing supports the story? Or is
Supports and serves a story. I mean, even definitely think about this for, even for callbacks too, and even initial auditions. It is sort of the same premise. Like you were selected for a reason, not accidentally. There's thousands of submissions they have to sort through. So you're not there haphazardly because people don't have time. People do not have time to sit and watch somebody that they don't want to watch for an audition. So you're there because they think, oh, this could help tell the story that we want to tell. Let me see what their ideas are. Because oftentimes they don't they kind of know, but not all the time. I've changed people's minds, but like, oh, I thought I wanted to cast this way, but you changed my mind. And I was like, great. And it's the same thing when you walk and when you're actually cast and you get the job. Clearly, you're there for a reason. You work to serve telling this story together collaboratively. And that's exciting too, because especially when you're starting out, you're like, oh, what's this story going to be? How are we going to tell it? That's really exciting. But these new people, or some people that I've worked with before, oh, wow. Like, oh, now I see why I help fit the story. Like, the energy is like this. And I offer this kind of like dynamic, perspective, and it's really physical. Like, because I know the things that are my strengths. I was like, oh, this is exciting. But again, like even initial auditions, I know it's hard to wrap. If you're asked to be there, you're there for a reason. So just be like, okay, I'm here for a reason. They think that I have this thing that can help tell it. So let me tell it. But it's hard to remember that, especially when you're nervous.
All of this is great, but I like to ask because I asked and you've already said great advice, but do you have anything you thought about that, like, oh, I want to make sure to say this?
I mean, it's so hard. Like, for a while I thought, gosh, coming out of school now is so hard because it's harder to meet people and da 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 da. But I actually don't. I mean, I just think it's shifted a bit. I always went to EPAs. I went to as many EPAs as I could, and that's how I met a lot of people. And you can now, EPAs are opening, and if you can go, go. But if you can't, and there's something you think you're good for, just like I did with Trinity Rep, reach out to casting, say what show you specifically are interested in, have monologues on tape, put them on Vimeo, YouTube, whatever. So you know you have your contemporary, your classical, couple options, maybe a scene. And it's okay if it's behind a blue screen. And send them a link in your resume or ask them if you can. And they almost always will, because that's normal now. And now with things opening up, like, go to the theaters who are go to their readings, look at their education departments and see if there's ways you can be involved with like developmental readings. I did that with New York Theater Workshop. I just was like, let me go to their education department. Let me see how I can get into like some of their like education readings or developmental stuff, because that's where new writers are coming through, and you get to meet new and upcoming writers and collaborators and artists that way. So I knew, look at specific theaters that you like their stuff, and like I was like, the Atlantic, what is their developmental stuff? Like, how do you just get into like a table read? The Lark, which doesn't exist anymore, would have been another really wonderful resource, but I would start that and then go to readings if your friends are doing, go to them. I think now with things opening up more and more, there will be more. But even if you can't, you can still send a tape. People will always take it.
Well, it's funny when you said ask, because I think, oh, it's not a tangible thing anymore. So you can just send the link. They can
You
watch it or
can.
not. It doesn't take up space. It's nice to ask, but it doesn't, it's not like before when a freaking stack of CDs or VHS
Yeah, I
was.
mean, I always ask and say, hey, I'm not able to make it, but would you accept a tape? And they'll usually say yes. And I send them a link, not, I don't like drop a whole video in the email. I send them a link to something. Usually it's on Vimeo or YouTube or something, an unlisted link. So that way it's not going to clog up their inbox. They can refer to it and they can send it to other people if they want. WeTransfer is another way to do it. You can send a link. But I do always ask, because I don't want to assume, I don't want to clog their inboxes off with like
Right.
a resume attachment or something
That
like that,
was, yeah. Well, I appreciate all of that. And I was thinking, because when I was talking to you this couple months ago about what do you think changed? And then you immediately went, well, I've been doing it for a while and it's time. And I think that is not to be denied, that it takes time, but you did do all the work to, you did things to, it's not just time, but I also not going to deny the fact that it takes time. Nothing is immediate.
Time. I mean, yeah, some people, it goes really quickly. But I also look at a lot of the actors that I really admire, and they've been at it for a really long time. And the actors, what kind of actor, what kind of artist and human do you want to be? And who are those artists that you really just love their work? And looking at their IMDb's and they're researching, their canon and what kind of like artist and human they are. And you're like, yeah, I want to do work like that. And I want to be that type of person in the world. And I want to be that kind of human in the world. And so the daily steps are just, they should feel good because you're like, yeah, but this is what I want to be. This is who I want to be.
Fun conversation. It talked to Lori, and in the conversation you heard, I got to work with her husband Seth on a play of his upstate where they live, and it was nice to spend time with both of them. But it was also just nice to catch up and hear the work that Lori does to keep her career moving forward and going. And I thought the idea of checking out the sites and seeing what's happening and putting herself forward, it's really valuable because I think a lot of us think, oh, I can't reach out, or they didn't, and it's like, well, why not? And used to do it a lot more because it was mailing. And I think I've talked to a lot of people lately about just email people. You never know, and you never know. And, you're solving a problem for them like she did with her Trinity job. And I also love the fact of you're there for a reason. And that really speaks to if you get an audition, to bring your artistry to the room, because the reason it's you and not somebody else is what do you bring to the problem, to the puzzle that makes you a unique fit to supporting that story? And I thought that was really good. I loved a lot of it. And also, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to her is because I said it in the interview, I think, is, when I asked her initially this summer, she's like, well, I've been at it a while. And it is true, it takes time for a lot of people. It takes time to build a career. But I was thinking, it takes time, but it also takes action. And one of the great things that Lori does is stay in contact and engage with people in normal ways, like using social media, not as networking, but just to be like, oh, I saw that. I see that you're doing this. That sounds great. Or when you're in the same area as somebody, making an effort to say, let's get coffee and get together. And, and it was just such normal interaction. But I'm like, right, it's hard to keep these relationships fresh. And I think one way to do it is just to acknowledge that I was thinking on the social media that I see you and we know each other and I'm encouraged by what you're doing. And maybe there's a personal note or maybe it's just acknowledging it in some way. But it's really great. And I think all of that and in the work and starting to recognize the artistry that you bring to the room is important. So thank you, Lori. Thank you all for listening. And I am going to say that the farm, if you want to check out our website, is celebrating 10 years, and we would love any support. Makes the podcast possible, makes the work we do, the College Collab. We have an audition workshop coming up December 16th. If anybody wants to take that, to email me, patrick@thefarmtheater.org, and makes that possible to be basically free. And also anything else we're doing. We're going to try in the next year to find production opportunities in non-traditional spaces because I think it's important for people to build a relationship artist with their audience in a more intimate setting. I think that is something that will build success in the future. So I'm looking forward to trying to do that and figure out how to do that. And with that, I hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. Looking forward to finishing up what you need to do at the end of the year. And with that, we're out.